You know that you're wrong, but you fear you're right.
You suspect you're out of sync
and think that you're out of your mind.
Everything you know is wrong.
Yeah. Al Martin is America's foremost expert on corporate and government fraud, a relentless whistleblower. He's written a book called The Conspirators, Secrets of an Iran-Contra Insider. Al, welcome to the radio program here in the Tom Hartman program.
Tom, good afternoon. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Oh, it's a pleasure. It's an honor. I assume you're familiar with Barbara Honegger's book, October Surprise.
I am.
Do you think that that book is credible?
Reasonably, in that most of the information came from Captain Gary Sick, formerly of the National Security Council, who also wrote a similar book, by the way, detailing his direct involvement in the so-called October Surprise affair.
Right. You know, I did some research on a book some years ago on the Kennedy assassination, and one of the things that we dug up was that the Bay of Pigs was originally planned by Richard Nixon in 1960, and it was supposed to happen in October of 60 to throw the election to Nixon, because Kennedy was beating up Nixon over the fact that, as you know, on his watch, Castro had gone communist, Cuba had gone communist, and it didn't happen because of a tropical storm. And Kennedy ended up inheriting this operation he didn't know existed, and of course we all know how that worked out. But that was the first, apparently, major Republican October surprise, was Nixon's. And then George Bush did the same, George Bush the Elder. Is that covered in your book?
Well, this book, my most recent book that you're referring to, The Conspirators, is really autobiographical in nature. And details my involvement, shall we say, in the shadows of Washington from the mid-1970s until the late 1980s, a period of time which included Iran-Contra from 1983 to 1986.
Great. Al Martin, the author of The Conspirators. Al, tell us about your involvement.
Well, Tom, if you divide Iran-Contra three ways, which is the right way to look at it, in my view, that is narcotics, weapons, and money. I was definitely on the money end of what we call Iran-Contra today.
Mm-hmm.
My involvement was to establish a series of fraudulent artifices, mostly real estate limited partnerships, oil and gas limited partnerships, that type of thing, to legitimize the flow of funds from wealthy right-wing private citizens in this country who wanted to donate to what Oliver North called the cause, what Richard C. Cord called the enterprise, that is the so-called fight against the Sandinista regime in Nicaragua, which, of course, was a fallacy to begin with. And insofar as it is against the law for a private citizen to donate money to an illegal covert operation of his own government, people like me are necessary to stand in the middle.
Right, as a money launderer, in essence.
Yes, not really money laundering in the classic sense, but as a quasi-legitimizer of money. That is, taking money that has been illegally contributed to a cause and washing it through a series of artifices to make it appear legal.
Right. And how did you do this, Al? What? Well, actually, a larger question, I think. Can you tell us about what led to the Iran-Contra operation? What were these people thinking? I mean, what brought this about?
Well, the Reagan regime saw it as being something politically popular, something that they could gain political brownie points, particularly from the right. This concept, as Reagan said in a speech in August of 1983, which really inaugurated Iran-Contra, when he said we are going to battle, quote, a growing red tide in Central America, close quote, to which he was referring to the Sandinista regime. Insofar as the United States did not want to formally become involved with the Sandinistas or against the Sandinistas, a covert operation known as Operation Black Eagle, which is Iran-Contra, was formulated in 1983. It was at this time that a seemingly obscure lieutenant colonel, a mid-ranking staff officer in the National Security Council, Oliver North, became then Director Casey's, Bill Casey's, fair-haired boy and was promoted to prominence.
Mm-hmm. What do you think of Honegger's allegation that the we're speaking here with Al Martin, the author of The Whistle of the Conspirators. What do you think of Barbara Honegger's allegation that really this began with the campaign where Reagan wanted the hostages, which had been taken by the Iranians, the Iranian students, as they were called, to be held so that because Carter was actually ahead in the polls through most of that campaign up until the last few months, and it was the hostages being held that really just wiped him out. I mean, he looked like a total wimp. That Bush went over to Paris and cut this deal with the Ayatollah, you know, keep hostages, and the hostages were released to the minute when Reagan was inaugurated, and that then they had to come up with the weapons and give them to the Iranians, and so they had to fund this somehow, and that's why it was Iran-Contra. Does that have traction in your mind?
Well, first of all, we must realize that the very term Iran-Contra is a term that was thought up by then-Attorney General Ed Meese on the eve of going public. We must remember that Iran-Contra was not only the largest and most egregious covert operation of the United States government ever undertaken, involving some 5,000 people at its peak in the spring of 1986, but it was the first illegal covert operation of government which the United States purposely collapsed and publicly revealed in order to frustrate any subsequent investigations thereunto.
Mm-hmm.
The very term Iran-Contra was thought up to mislead the people and the media into thinking that the entire scandal was just a small illegal covert operation wherein weapons were originally illicitly sold to the government of Iran, the deal being brokered by Ali North and Amiran Nir and others, and the $43 million of ill-gotten profits thereunto were diverted to support the envisioned 50,000-man Contra army in Central America.
Right.
And that's what the Reagan-Bush regime tried to make the people believe.
This was the cover story.
Which was the cover story. They desperately wanted to keep out of the equation that the egregious part of the operation was the Contra part of the operation. The narcotics trafficking, the weapons trafficking, the assassinations that went along with it, the attempt to suborn U.S. law in every manner possible, that was something that the Reagan-Bush regime attempted to limit.
Al Martin, the author of The Conspirators, Al, how does this fit in? How does the Bush family fit into this?
Then Vice President George Bush was ultimately in charge of all Iran-Contra operations.
He was the former director of the CIA at that point.
Formerly director of the CIA, former ambassador to China, etc.
Actually, he was never the ambassador to China. He was the U.S. Trade Representative to China.
Hey, a trade rep, I'm sorry.
He allowed the ambassador thing to be promoted. You know,
yes,
which
I know. Even I tend to use it because it's been picked up by the media so often.
Oh yeah, and he's even referred to himself that way, but it's a lie. He wasn't the ambassador.
No, you're quite correct. Although he used ambassadorial cover and used the assets of the ambassador in China to cover up an illicit affair that he had.
Oh really?
In Beijing at the time.
Affair with a woman, kind of affair.
Yes.
Oh, interesting.
A whole another story.
Yeah,
but anyway, during Iran-Contra, George Bush, then Vice President George Bush Sr., was in charge of all Iran-Contra operations, despite what he said about his famous quote, "I was out of the loop." All Iran-Contra operations were ultimately consolidated under the office of the Vice President, which is not unusual in that usually illegal covert operations of government are ultimately consolidated under the office of the Vice President to provide plausible deniability to the president.
Well, it's just like Nixon running Operation Zapata, which in 1960, which was you know, run in part by the Zapata Oil Company of Texas. The intelligence was gathered by them. They had offshore drill, offshore rigs off the coast of Cuba. And we know it as the Bay of Pigs invasion, but its official code name was Operation Zapata.
Right.
And,
this is when George Bush Sr.'s father, Prescott, was still managing director of Zapata.
Right, and George Bush...
And George Bush Sr. later takes over the same position.
Right.
And then in conjunction with George Jr. and Jeb, perpetrates a series of master limited partnership oil and gas frauds out of both Zapata and Apache.
Frauds?
The terminus of which came in about 1986 when all those limited partnerships fell apart. And a lot of people in this country, particularly little nice old ladies that had bought into those deals, lost money.
Hmm. So how, if fraud is a strong word here, Al, what do you have to back that up?
Well, in my book, Tom, I try to list a series of frauds committed by the Bush family under the cover of using Iran-Contra as a cover. The proof that I use is my direct involvement in these frauds. And
Oh, you were involved in them?
Yeah, both as a partner and oftentimes as a facilitator of these frauds.
Okay,
I marketed several of these frauds directly.
Remarkable.
And these frauds included Jeb Bush's, now governor of the state of Florida, Jeb Bush's famous IMC, or International Medical Corporation, fraud of the mid-1980s, a fraud that cost the American taxpayers some $350 million. His brother, Neil's Gulfstream Realty Development fraud, George Jr.'s involvement in the National Heritage Life Insurance swindle, George Sr.'s involvement in the Lone Star Trucking fraud, the E-Systems diversion fraud. The Bush family, and I know this sounds odd to say it this way, but this is the way the book is written. Various members of the Bush family have fraud specialities, and you will see this theme played over and over again. Jeb tends to gravitate towards real estate and oil and gas fraud. Neil tends to gravitate towards banking and real estate fraud. George Jr. gravitates towards securities and insurance fraud. And George Sr. becomes involved in a very wide variety of frauds. But traditionally, these were what was known at the time in the salad days of the mid-1980s as the five old Republican favorites for the generation of illicit monies. That is oil and gas, real estate, insurance, banking, and securities fraud.
Right. Remarkable. Al Martin, the author of The Wis of the Conspirators, Secrets of an Iran-Contra Insider. Al, I remember during the big savings and loan meltdown, I was out in Denver, and a fellow was driving me. It wasn't the city of Denver, as I recall. It was one of the cities near there. And he drove me past this country club, and there was this huge house opposite it. And he said, that is Neil Bush's home, and it was bought and paid for with money from the Silverado meltdown. Now, was that is his statement accurate?
The house in question was then valued at some $2 million, which Neil bought for $800,000, was a foreclosed piece of property.
Uh-huh.
That was a common way. Yeah, during the mid-1980s, it was common for Republican-sympathetic banking institutions, security firms, insurance firms, etc., to pay back Republican favors by allowing prominent Republicans to buy real estate at exceptionally cheap prices, for instance, or by allowing prominent Republicans into sweetheart insider securities deals, for instance, something that I directly participated in at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Harkin Energy, the only thing Harkin Energy never produced hardly any oil or gas. The only thing Harkin Energy ever was for the Bush family and the Pilgrim Investment Trust, the Bush family's principal offshore investment vehicle, was a pump and dump stock scheme. Wherein
right.
Harkin Energy, the stock would be taken down to $1, $1.50. It would be pumped up to $7 or $8 on a lot of fraudulent press releases and then dumped a second time. This process was repeated over and over again. It is one of the ways that the Bush family paid back favors.
So Al Martin, the author of The Conspirators, Secrets of an Iran-Contra Insider, Al, how did you get in the middle of this?
Well, originally I started my career in the military and rose to the ranks in the United States Navy and ultimately wound up in naval intelligence. I had to leave the military in order to become involved in, shall we say, the illicit covert side of government. Insofar, classically, our government does not like to have active duty military personnel involved in illegal covert operations of state because there are too many direct connections. You will find, for instance, in Iran-Contra's principal players, Colonel North, General Secord, General Adderholt, Colonel Dutton, Gadd, and Steele, etc. These men were all retired at the time.
Mm-hmm. And presumably doing very well from this. Boy.
Well, they constitute, we used to call them the Colonel's Club, although most were generals. There was the slang at the time, the Colonel's Club. There is a cabal in Washington of retired generals, colonels, admirals.
Al Martin, I have one more question for you. I'm wondering, why are you not in the middle any longer with these folks?
Well, because I became a turncoat in October 1986 when Iran-Contra began to fall apart. And to protect myself, or to prevent me from having the word scapegoat written on my back, I, along with others, began leaking information to the Senate Foreign Relations Investigating Subcommittee, then chaired by Senator John Kerry, which formed the subsequent basis of the Kerry Committee hearings the following year.
Mm-hmm. Al Martin, where is the hope in this for America? What lessons should we learn from this and carry from your experience?
What the American people should remember is the words of Alan Greenspan in his April 1993 NBC interview when he was asked why he purposely sabotaged the re-election bid of George Sr., and he said very simply, the nation can't afford any more Bushes.
Oh, my.
And I think that's apropos to the situation today, certainly.
Yeah. So you think the hope is to win the election in 2004 on presumably
It is imperative for the long-term economic survival of the United States that George Bush not be reelected. The deficits that Bushonomics represents cannot be sustained indefinitely.
Yeah. Yeah, this is very clear. Al Martin, the author of Conspirators, Secrets of the Iran-Contra Insider, thank you very much for being on the program. I appreciate it very much. This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. We'll be back tomorrow. Thank you very much for being with us.